Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Okay, so today we are going to go over the six principles of sexual health. And this one comes from the Harvey Institute.
The principles come from like a couple different sources, but the Harvey Institute is in a lot of research about it and have published a lot of information. But it is, from my understanding, it's been around longer, but the Harvey Institute,
it kind of draws from like the WHO, the UN.
Right. Was going to bring up like the definition the World Health Organization gives sexual health, right? Because this is the six principles of sexual health, is human rights related to sexual health, sexual pleasure, eroticism, gender, sexual relationship diversity, sexual satisfaction, disease, violence, female genitalia mutilation, sexual dysfunction. Maybe this is a long one to read, the mental health related to sexual health. So the bigger, right? So sexual health is considered part of the four pillars of anyone's health, right? So there's physical, mental, spiritual, and sexual. And so
physical and sexual are separate. A lot of people umbrella physical and have sexual underneath it, but your sexual health is actually separate and different than just your physical health.
Yeah, it encompasses your emotional and spiritual health as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that it's part of who we are. I actually had a really good, a wonderful session with somebody who had a lot of early messages about how sex was evil, was one of just kind of what they grew up with. And we had this conversation about how sex is important and it should be treated as something as that is important in your life. And something that you pay attention to, not just something that gets disregarded or treated as evil.
I'm not here because of sex. I'm here because of a chemistry set. So, you know.
Anyway, there might be a lot of awkward moments, but that's okay. We're into it here.
Awkward or fun? I don't know. It's the same
thing. Yeah, it depends. But I really love being able to talk about this because I think for so long we've put a lot of shame and criticism around sex. And so being able to say what is healthy versus right or wrong is really important. And I like that term.
We're very open about the fact we come from a very religious community, right? And sex has often been labeled as secret, sacred, but there has been very little really differentiation of what those two things mean. And there's a difference between saying something needs to be kept sacred or secret. And we'll talk more about that probably in other episodes, but you know, we want, sex is an all-encompassing thing. So we're talking about a lot of different things within this. And so the great thing about the principles that we're going to go over, they apply to pretty much any intimate relationship. It can be a casual hookup. It can be a marital relationship. It can be a long-term relationship. It can be whatever. If those things can be healthy, if they are conducted in a way that adhere to these six principles, which I think is really nice because it's not just saying monogamous, two gender relationship half is the only way to be healthy. Like it's showing like, hey, there are a lot of ways you can copy and paste these principles into all these different lifestyles. And, you know, you can still create a healthy environment in all of them, which is great.
And I love that there are principles of healthy relationships for everyone. It's not mm-hmm. a matter of there's only, and I like what you're saying, there's not just one right way or wrong way, but you can find a healthy sexual, there are values and there are principles that create yes. healthy sexual experiences and relationships.
Yeah, I like that it's not a set of hard, fast rules, it's principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first principle is consent.
Why would consent be the first principle, guys?
I like, was it a professor that told you what consent is, his definition? What was it?
It was a hell yeah and a high five. So I can't remember who, but yeah, consent should be a hell yeah and high five at all times. And it should be just a, yeah, I want to do this, not just I feel I need to, or that my partner wants to do it. It's a, I would really like to, Dr. Bron Harvey, part of the Harvey Institute, he stated, it's, I want to include you in this experience that will enrich my life, enrich, you know, your life too, but I'm not really focusing on enriching your life. I want you to include an experience and I want you to be part of this with me.
Ongoing active participation that can be withdrawn at any time.
Yes.
And something that unfortunately men will tell other men and use against women is that men are incapable of stopping once they have started sex. And that is not true. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that's not true is because if a dog can hold food on their nose and wait until being told, and a human's brain is much more powerful, then we are saying that men are less capable than beasts. And that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important too to recognize, as we're saying that, that discomfort versus incapable are two very different things. You might be uncomfortable if you get told no, or if consent is stopped, withdrawn, or never given. That is true. You might be uncomfortable.
Yeah,
you
may unfun, uncomfortable, like survivable,
right?
But not incapable.
We just talked about chronic illnesses. This isn't in that realm. Right. This isn't like, you know, oh, there's no way to work through this. Right. No, that's not in any way comparable to that.
And again, the other thing around consent is we want to acknowledge the ability to consent means I understand what I'm going to do and I'm understanding why, which is why there is a discussion around at what age and in what situations can we give consent. So I like, again, the hell yeah and a high five, because it's not the same thing as a yes, right? Because certainly there have been situations where people have been coerced into saying the words that might feel like consent, but they need to have the emotion along with it as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe another episode we'll talk about duty sex, where you're doing it because you feel like you have to, and it's not coercion. You're doing it. It's a more complicated topic and we'll talk about it another time, but enthusiastic ongoing participation is the definition. Now the second principle is non-exploitative.
That goes a lot with consent, but it is different. Some people say it's the same.
Exploitive is when a person leverages power or control to receive sexual gratification, and this can include, it can be very transactional, and it can also be very subconscious, so, or unspoken. So if this idea that I will be safer if I provide sex to you, meaning I won't get hurt or beat or emotionally abused, that would be exploitive.
Yeah, what's the consequence for saying no?
Right. And
there, or what's the reward for saying yes?
Yes. And so no power should change because of, or control should be given or taken because of a sexual experience. So for example, if I know that I will be able to afford food for the next month, if I have sex, or I'll get more money in my account, there's a level of exploitation going on in there. Some of the other things, money, drugs, clothing, shelter, and love are all ways that people are sometimes receive coercion into sex. And so just be aware of that as we're engaging in healthy sexual
relationships.
The next principle is honesty. All right, do you have open and effective communication? Are you aware of what each person is bringing into the sexual relationship? Do you know what you're going is that a brain fart?
Do you know what were you going with that?
I don't know, it's a brain fart.
Okay, there you go.
Well, I'll bring in this. So honesty includes making sure that you're giving the right information to the right people. So for example, your sexual health means that you're being honest with your partners, but also your community. If you, you know, so this comes into, you don't have to tell everyone your business if it, but if it doesn't affect them, but if you've had sex with somebody and turns out that you have a disease, this, there's an honesty aspect that comes.
Which you need to be honest. That goes with later principles too, but mm-hmm. It's like how you got it, I think, is also the thing of like, you know, it's not just like, oh, I woke up and all of a sudden this happened. Isn't that weird? Right. Like it's, hey, I went out, I did this. And I like that you also said, like, I'm not just telling everyone who needs to know.
Right. Well, and need versus want is mm-hmm. again in here. Right. So we don't need coercion around honesty either. But medical providers, so that they can treat you and get you the help that you need, you want to be able to find a medical provider you feel comfortable being honest with.
Mm-hmm.
And honesty with yourself, even just honesty about what am I doing and why am I doing it, is part of your mental and emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of just whether you're going to enjoy and experience this is a healthy pillar of life versus one of sickness or deceit or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Shared values next.
Yep.
I think so. Yeah. So the next principle is shared values with this person. So, okay. I've had some people ask like, "Hey, Haley, you say that hookups can be adherent to principles of sexual health." Okay. This is how shared values falls into that. Okay, if you guys are both realizing you value honesty, you value fun, you value authentic self, you value positive experiences, those are things that you guys can share and still have a healthy interaction with one another, okay? If you are looking at different things and you are realizing that this person is not someone you agree with, you realize that this person is not someone you particularly enjoy, but you want to get sex out of them, it's not going to translate to a very healthy experience, right? In fact, it might breed things like resentment. It might breed things like not feeling like you are absolutely consenting to the scenario, right? Consenting to who the person is that you're having intimate relationships with. So having shared values does translate to a lot of different things. Same thing within a monogamous marriage, okay? The same principles apply. If you and your significant other do not share values, that also is a breeding ground for not healthy attributes of the relationship. And it is important to recognize, to have good, healthy, fun interactions, there needs to be essentially kind of like those ground points, those checkpoints of, you know, hey, do we agree about these things? And those things are really important to, you know, adhere to in a healthy relationship.
This topic can sometimes bring up, what if the other person isn't honest? And I will say that's why this comes after, you know, non-coercion and honesty, is we're assuming that shared values is coming from that honest non-coercion place,
mm-hmm.
and that your values come in. I've had people say, what if I enjoy one type of pleasure and my spouse doesn't? Those kinds of things. Those are conversations that you need to have and come to an agreement together. If you're saying we're in a monogamous relationship and this is what we're experiencing, it's more important that you guys agree together than that anyone outside of the experience agrees with you.
And that's part of those values too. Like, what if I enjoy one sexual act, my partner doesn't? That's why we talk and we have open communication, because it's like, what does that mean for you? Why do you like it? What's going on there? That's you talking about the values, not just specifically about what you want to do, the verb of what's going on, right? And so that's why these conversations of having it, if you understand a person's thought process, values will also kind of tell you what their stopping points are, their boundaries, right? And you need to have those conversations with the people that you are engaging with, so that you can understand what exactly is it that this person is trying to get out of the scenario, and how can I be engaged in also protecting my own values in that. So yeah, shared values, super important.
And it's okay, we've talked about values before, to note that values can change and need to be rediscussed as relationships go on. So we talked about this a little bit with consent, but just because it was agreed to once doesn't mean that it's always agreed to, and it needs to be a continual conversation.
I'm glad that you connected those two dots.
Hey, so the fifth one is protection from STIs, HIV, and unwanted pregnancy. So we need to protect our health, right? So sexually transmitted infection, right? We need to know that we are protecting and we're having I'm going to use the word consent around what we're doing to protect ourselves from that, including information, meaning this goes back to honesty, right? And how we're choosing to protect ourselves. Unwanted pregnancy.
That's a huge one that a lot of people don't recognize. Male or female, whomever it may be, that is the one who is wanting to get pregnant, the other one isn't, right? Or vice versa, right? I think that's a huge one that I've heard of. A lot of betrayal comes from that, from a spouse. So it's like, they knew I wasn't ready for a baby, but they still didn't pull out, or they didn't, you know, use contraceptive and I thought they did, and all this kind of stuff. Like, protecting your spouse from one of those scenarios, whatever it may be, it does not always look like going outside the marriage. It can be within the marriage that those things are not being protected. And so essentially what you're doing is, by saying I'm protecting, you know, I am actively making sure that unwanted pregnancy is not happening, STIs are not happening, those kinds of things, I am protecting the autonomy of my partner I am with. I'm protecting the fact that they have decided this with their body, and they've decided they want these kinds of things to happen or not to happen. And I'm protecting their right to choose that, right? And it's just as if, like, you know, if I know that my fiance is allergic to, not even allergic to, but his stomach gets upset with ice cream, I'm not going to go to him and be like, but you really want it, right? I'm going to say, listen, you've made this discovery about yourself that you do not enjoy this. You don't like the fact that your stomach feels really gross after you really, for the next day or two, it's just hard on your system. I'm not going to then try to persuade him to do something that's going to actively not protect his ability to feel okay, right? So same thing.
Yeah. One of the other things that I would add to this is that it shouldn't be something where we are using any kind of external values either to pressure people, whether they be community values. Your parents should not be telling you whether they want grandkids, and that makes the decision. The people involved in the behavior need to be making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And not a brain fart. Many STIs are asymptomatic, meaning that they don't show any signs or symptoms. You won't know that you have an STI. The only way to know whether you have an STI is to get tested. And so you won't be able to tell whether you or another person has an STI. And so you'll need to get tested. If you or your partner are sexually active or have been sexually active, it is imperative that you get tested. You cannot compare pictures of yourself with pictures of STIs online and think that you are safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of them deal with internal systems and can lead to some really big issues later on in life if we're not careful.
Particularly like infertility or nerve damage.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you are looking at starting a family, sometimes it's the only time you notice that there is something is when it's passed on to children in utero and things like that too. So you just want to make sure it affects more than just you.
And it's okay to want to be educated about these things too. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong about wanting to understand them. Make sure you're getting education from a trusted source.
Yep.
I know I learned some things in high school that did not come from trusted sources. Luckily, I was able to have those get better education later on in life. So
yeah. Are we on our last principle?
It's pleasure.
Yes. We want you to have fun. Everyone wants you to have fun. I mean, if you're not getting pleasure from sex, I'm sorry. That's also something too that could come into play with seeking a medical or mental health assistance. If you are not getting pleasure from sex, but you're doing it out of obligation, I've had many women recently. There's something called vaginismus that can sometimes happen where it is like pain and
not a little pain.
No, it's a lot. And I do talk to a lot of women who, that is one of my specialties, women and their sexual health and also their emotional health, all these different things. And a lot of them think that that is just normal. that, well, women are supposed to enjoy it, or women aren't, you know, I do it because, you know, my spouse, my partner, whoever it is, I wants to do it.
Cause that's a historical narrative around women and sex.
Yep. And so they just say, that's just part of being a woman, is you won't enjoy it as much, or it will be painful. Not true. Okay. We have pelvic floor specialists that help women in those areas to see what's going on. There can be a trauma response. I've had clients who were in a very unhealthy relationship and they experienced a lot of physical and like really egregious pain. They go into a healthier relationship. They don't have that pain anymore after some work, mental health wise. And it's very interesting to see that change. And it is one of those things where you deserve to feel good about these scenarios. You don't have to try everything you don't want to do, but you deserve to, when you do want to try something, not feel in pain. Same with men. I don't deal specializing with men and pain and things like that myself, but there are many people who do. And you want to be able to just, even if it's not like the most erotic, extreme scenario,
like Peyronie's disease.
Yeah. Or you don't, even if like your interaction sexually with one another is not like a play by play, you know, erotic scenario of like, you know, the most amazing time, you still deserve to have pleasure out of it and still deserve to enjoy what's going on. And also just fun. It should just be fun, even in a non, you know, sexually charged way. You just should still have fun with one another.
I think one of my favorite things about, just the human body, and this comes down to women, is that the clitoris is the only thing in the human body that is only designed for pleasure. It doesn't serve any other function. And I don't know who to give the credit to that phrase for. I know that Julie Hinks says it a lot, another therapist. I know that other people have said it before that, but every other thing in the male body serves another function on top of that. The penis has other functions. The prostate has other functions, even though they also have pleasurable functions. But the clitoris only serves for pleasure. There is no other function on top of that. And so clearly the human body has been designed to have pleasure.
Another thing too, go talk to people, go talk to specialists. If you don't know what's going on, if something isn't feeling okay, if you want to learn more, okay. But also if you go to a specialist, there was a recent, oh gosh, where's the study real quick? They're maybe not recent, but they've been doing these studies where, in 1987, they surveyed primary care physicians. Don't just go to your primary care physician, go to someone who specializes it. If you have an amazing one, bless you. Okay. That's great. There should be more out there, but that's not always the case. So I tell people, figure it out. In 1987, they surveyed 130 primary care physicians, 129, 41% of them incorrectly identified the hymen, 11% of them incorrectly identified the clitoris. In 2000, they surveyed 166 primary care physicians, 6% still incorrectly identified the clitoris, 38% incorrectly identified the hymen. And then other parts as well, even the urethra, 28% of them incorrectly identified that.
No.
So when we're talking about this, this is why I tell people go to specialists. Not just the fact, it's not going to have always a bigger price tag to go into a specialist. They just are specifically trained to know how to better help. Pelvic floor therapists can sometimes be the most amazing places to go to. Certain, you want to go to gynecologists, not just primary care physicians, things like that, especially also men, same thing. Unfortunately, the women's body is just less labeled. It is very internalized and a lot of people don't, you know, didn't do as much research in the beginning of days. Men's bodies are definitely a lot easier to be labeled and things like that. So there are more specialties in men's stuff with that. Even then though, sexual health is still very below where it needs to be. Women's bodies, especially, that's where I get on my soapbox. Go to someone who knows, who is a professional, not just, you know, Aunt Marge who's down the street who happens to know, you know.
You have a 3D model.
I have a couple 3D models. I have an amazing, there's an amazing book called Vaginas and Periods 101. It's a pop-up book for children to learn what these sexual health places are. They're also, I just found out that they're making a penis pop-up book for people to also understand. There are models to know, So when we're talking about sexual health, it's also both talking about what the equipment is that you're using. Sexual health also does not have to mean intercourse. It can mean so many other different things.
Like, you know, washing.
Yeah. No, but also, okay. Sexual health can also mean things that are not specifically going towards the anatomical areas that are known for sexual function.
But there
can
be you and I both have anatomical models of the female reproductive organs. I also have a pull apart male model in my office.
Yeah. So I feel a little left out, guys. Like I don't have enough models in my
office. If you want to be a sex therapist, Jen, you can come join us.
You are 2 months away from your full certification
through the so I can't they have these weird rules. I can't say that I'm training in it on any of my printed materials, but I'm going through like the American Association for Sex Therapy.
I'm a year away from my certification.
Yeah. And then there's a couple other things I'm doing. So like for me, I put the time into learning this because it's important. And I know so many people don't know. So when it comes to sexual health principles, this is so important. We all know, even if we are not sexually active, you still have a sexual side of self and you need to know what to expect if you want to go.
No one just looked at Captain America and gone, ew.
Yeah. But even, hey, if you're asexual, let's just shout out to that population. Cause a lot of people I have a couple clients who are asexual. They still have a sexual side of self to know what's healthy for themselves. So it doesn't mean you have to act on any of these things, but you do need to, you are in charge of your education of knowing what do I want to do maybe eventually, or what do I want to know so I can have an opinion about it. Okay. So it doesn't have to apply to people who are actively trying to pursue a sexual side of self right now. Okay.
One of the things I want to add is that, you know, at the beginning we talked about there's four pillars of health, the physical, the mental, spiritual, and sexual. Pleasure is the connection of those four things, right? So as we're talking about this, the idea is that it, the connection of the body is a beautiful, wonderful thing. It's okay to educate yourself. It's okay to know things. I just think about mental health, I wish more people were worried about their everyday emotional regulation than they were about whether they were having a mental health crisis. Because if we did worry about whether we were every day healthy, we would have less mental health crises. And I'll say the same thing about sexual health. If you worry about your everyday, how am I doing? Not whether I'm sexually active or not, but how am I doing in my sexual health? And I'm making informed choices. Then you can, what's the word, stave off other really significant illnesses and disruptions in your life in the sexual health world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So get educated. Even if you are not currently sexually active or don't plan on being it, you still have the responsibility to learn, how am I going to implement these six principles in my life? And what can I do to better help myself know my options of different things?
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We would love to hear from you.